Accession number 30260, Reel 9.
This is the fifth reel of a taped interview with Ernie Banks in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 7th of the 9th, 2007, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Ernie, we were talking last time about your experience in relation to sort of developing an instinct through experience, basically, and coming to rely on your own instincts in many cases.
Well, I found that one thing that I completely had to depend on. And I also found that after every mission, I would take time off to look at the mission, say, now, how did I go? Where could I have improved it? Where did I make mistakes? And so on. Now, one of the things I learned very early in the first mission already, that the greatest trouble that you can have is fear. If fear takes over, you cannot think rational. And if you can't think rational, you do things that makes it even more difficult to get out of a situation. So I trained myself in trying to keep my fear down. You never can, of course, avoid it, because the instinct of preservation is so tremendous in a person that you can never stop fear. But I have learned that you can control fear to a certain extent. And by doing that, you have the ability to think a little more rational at the moment, at that time, and make decisions that might just save your life.
Well, how would you control this fear? What sort of things would you be telling yourself?
The first thing is by knowing that your fear is coming up, because you immediately must say to yourself, say, stop this bloomin' business of being fine. You're here, there's nothing else you can do about it, so don't get frightened. You are scared, but don't think about it. Go on with your task. What is your task? What have you got to do at this present moment? And forget about your fear. And if you keep saying that with a deep sincerity, you can, in a way, control your fear. You still perspire, you still get the salivary in your mouth drying up, but you get controlling it. And I've done that many times. And for example, I remember one time I walked past a house that was very important, because in the residence was the head of the Capitai, what is equivalent to the German Gestapo. And he was doing some very, very nasty things against our fragile little resistance movement that had been started. And actually my job was to eliminate him. Well, to do that, you can't just walk in and do. You've got to make a proper assessment. Where is he? How can you do it? But one evening, I was walking slowly past, and he had a guard in front of his house. And that guard got suspicious. He looked at me. I was already rather scared and confused, because it's not a very pleasant job planning a person to assess, to assassinate. I can tell you that for a normal, average person, having to do something like that, you really get very tied up, extremely tied up. But I kept it under control, and then he looked at me, and he sort of hesitantly wanted to cross, because I was on the other side of the road, to challenge me. And that didn't help my fear. I felt even more scared. But I thought, now think, what can you do? And I said, the best thing in these circumstances is to walk straight up to him, practically, across the street as if you're going to go to the other side, but walk towards him, don't run away from him. And I did, and it worked. Soon as I started across the road, and sort of towards him, he stopped, went back to where he was standing, and looked at me, and then not anymore. So there is an example that if you can control your fear, where the natural instinct would be, go and run before he can shoot at you or something. I did the opposite, and it worked. A lot of luck, of course, but that is an example that if you can control fear to a certain extent so that you at least think rational, then you have a better chance, I'm not saying a complete, but a better chance of surviving. I'm not even saying that that reason that I survived, there was, always remember, 80% luck of it, that game. But it did help me. And that's one thing I learned, is the moment you step off the sub or you land somewhere, control your fear as much as possible. And in any circumstance, always keep on saying to yourself, fear is not going to help you. You're very scared, but you're here now. There's nothing else you can do. So for goodness sake, try to keep it under control. And I think if you can do that to a certain extent, you have a better chance. But the worst thing in all these things is your own conscience. Because in this job, we had to do personal things. What you don't have in a normal army, navy or air force. It's a different story being on a ship that start firing and sinking another ship. You don't know where that ship is, you don't know the people. Or if you're in the army, you all get up and do, you see people falling dead. But it's a mess. It's not so personal. But personal when you're one or two people and you're walking around there and you got to do jobs that are very unpleasant is a complete different situation. And for the average person, it is extremely difficult to think of these things, especially after the event. Not so much when you're doing it, because that fear also helps you to get on with it without any hesitation. But it is afterwards, when you're on your own, especially at night, you start to think about these things, and there you get your conscience start to weigh very heavily on you. And that has occurred to me so many times for such a long time, even 10, 20, 30 years after. I still sometimes have times, and I can't talk about these things, and you say, you get a very, very, very funny feeling. Feeling of very hard to describe, actually. You sort of get a little bit of fear again, and you sort of seem to see their faces again, or moments of the situation that comes back to you. I find I start to tremble a bit, and if people talk to me, I get sort of a bit frightened, and I get I don't want to talk to people. I walk away, and that is still with me 60 years. You still have times that and I feel that is your conscious of things you do that you should never have to do, and that's really the bad part of war.
We can talk about some of those things later on too, and how your experience has affected you in the post-war period. But at the time, presumably, fear also helps you. And you mentioned it helps you sort of keep doing your job. But it sort of keeps you on your toes as well, presumably.
That's right. It's a terrific motivator. And that really motivates you because you fear, you say, it's him or me. You see, that situation of whatever the situation is, it's my life against this. So that is the best motivator you can have, and you do everything at your very best because of this feeling you have. But you must I found that I must all the time kept thinking rationally about it and say, and even be prepared on the last moment to change your plans or ideas to be successful. Don't ever go in with a pre-motion type of thing. I'll do it this way, this way, this way. Work on the moment that you're there and see the best what you can do and then do it. But do not ever hesitate. If you hesitate, you're gone. Hesitation is the worst enemy in that aspect, that you must never hesitate. If you make up your plan, even if at the slightest moment you think, oh, this is not actually a good idea, carry on. Once you are involved, then you carry on with that plan to the fullest extent.
Well, presumably this knowledge sort of can only really come from experience.
Yes, that is the problem. I mean, the work we did wasn't something that you could have in a manual that you can look up and say, what do I do in this situation? What did the manual say? It is, in every instance, it's different. And even if you make two missions, what I haven't done, in identical cases, you still would find, I think, that every mission was completely different, because this human situation and everything else is different, different people, different reactions, different situations. So everything, and that is why it's important not to go in with a preceived plan. If you go in with a preceived plan, you can have a rough plan, say, I must land there and there, and this is what I must do, and try and do it this and this way. But from then on, you must assess the situation as you find it, make up your mind how you're going to do it, but then go through it without any hesitation.
Can you recall a time when fear almost destroyed a mission or
myself,
cost you your life?
Especially in the early missions, the second and third, it was fear that made me hesitate. And by hesitating, I sort of gave the, for another better word, the enemy, a chance to realize that things weren't all kosher, and therefore were more awake of the what I was going to do, and not so much the element of surprise. I let the element of surprise go through my own fear and hesitation. Not quite sure, oh, will I stop, will I go on, will I do it later? And that would nearly have cost you my life. And that was only because of not true fear, you start to change your mind. So that in the early missions, I noticed, and I always, thinking back of it, I said, well, I must never do that again. Once I make up my mind, go straight through it. Wrong or right, you've made your decision, do it now. And don't hesitate. Because, funny, I have a strong suspicion that there is such a thing that what you think or what you're going to do has, in a way, the other person or enemy, whatever you like to call it, can sense that. And the more you hesitate, the more he seems to sense it, and of course the more difficult the task becomes. Now, I strongly believe that if you keep on, even if he can never see you, steering in the person, he will know somebody is steering or somebody is, something is not right. I'm very sure of that. So to keep, and that is the greatest savior of us, the situation of surprise. That is your greatest savior, and that's the only way you're successful, because you have the element of surprise. But you can lose that element of surprise through hesitation or fear.
Mm. You're mentioning this sort of development of experience or sensing the situation before it happened. People also talk of being able to smell fear, people being able to sense this sort of...
It comes out in many, many different ways. Sense. I always felt I had a fairly good sense in being able to see if it was another person or people that were there. if they were very aggressive or average or even a bit of introverted.
Well, you're mentioning that you know the type of person that you were dealing with.
And that helped me a terrible lot because, funny part, the very aggressive people are the easiest to see, to read, and you know exactly what they're going to do. It's the person or the calm person that you got to be very careful for, because they also, being calm, can think rational, and therefore you've got a much more greater enemy in him than if you get a very aggressive person. An aggressive person is easy to read. You know, he's going to be aggressive, he's going to attack. And if he doesn't attack, he hasn't seen you or heard you or so. So you know you're right. But it's the person that is calm and collective and seems to be the easiest is the most difficult person to deal with.
You were mentioning earlier the missions that you were involved with that were mainly to seek out the enemy and observe. Of those operations, do you recall one that was impossible, that you just weren't going to be able to?
Oh, many, many. I had several missions that I was asked to do, and when I got there, I found it was impossible to do. For example, in one case, we had to find out how many people were in the administration in the Capitae, and how many civilians were attached to it, and who were they? Well, there was no way I was going to find that out, because I just couldn't do it. So that mission, you come home and it's just abandoned, you know. You say, I went there, but it was impossible to find out, especially if you don't speak the language, and that then it becomes impossible. You can only sort of count on the Chinese in those days, say, do you know anything about that now? No. Well, if nobody knows, well, you have to give it away. Oh, there were several missions. No, don't think that all missions were successful. Matter of fact, the minority was successful. The majority was you abandoned. Also, even in one case, we had to abandon because I couldn't land. The weather was too rough. And the submarine commander wouldn't stay longer than a week. And that week, the weather was atrocious. I just couldn't land, so I went back again. It was purely, completely, I couldn't land because of the weather. In the wrong monsoon.
Well, you also talk of this sort of experience of being in the right place at the right time, working with a sort of a greater being that's in control of the picture anyway. It's all about luck.
Yes. Now, that you go in one mission, it's so easy to see, and everything goes your way. Everything goes your way. You find things quick, you do things, and it's marvelous, and you really think you're very good. But there's nothing else that everything, what you do, what you touch, turns into gold.
Let's continue to talk about that experience in relation to everything going well.
Yes, you come in, you want to remember you always work at dark at night time, and you get there and you find exactly the spot, you find a way to get to where you want to go for night time, and everything works your way, and that mission just is ideal. On the other hand, I've come across that before you even land, you hit a rock in the dark where you come, and you get hurt. You hurt. So that is one thing. You then get over that. You bandage it up, whatever it is, or so. But worst thing is that you might done something to your arm or your leg, and you find it difficult to walk. So you get that against you. You go and you'll get lost. You've lost the path, and you struggle to find a way, and it's getting lighter, and you still haven't been able to get to a spot where the people can't see you. And then from then on, I always find you get nothing else goes your way.
Let's talk about those experiences when there was literally this sort of mission impossible. There was just no way that what you were going to do was going to work.
Oh, several of those missions I've had, where people were asking us to do things, or I was asked to do things, and found that I just could not even get near it. One of the main things was, of course, on the main island in Indonesia, was this Java, very, very heavily populated. And it is just was impossible to even land. And when you land, let alone to survive, because you couldn't hide. There is jungle there, but a long distance away. And because of 40 million on a small little island in those days, there are always people around, and hostile people. So it was just impossible. So it was just a question of stay where we were, waiting for night, signal the ship, I'm coming back, I can't land. And the missions, generally spoken, if it had to be done in a city or in a fairly big town, were normally speaking very difficult to achieve. The missions that we had most successful was is in more isolated areas where you had a chance to get around a bit better. But in thickly populated area, the situation became impossible. But you try and explain that to bureaucrats 2,000 k's away or something in Melbourne, they still sort of say, don't believe you, but be very polite, but still the mission will come up and say, could you try and do this and this and this? And you say, well, that's very heavily populated, you sure? Oh, have a go at it. Well, you have a go at it, but you never get anywhere.
Was there ever a time when you thought, I'll blow this, I'm just going to hide under a tree today and take this mission off?
Oh yes, many times. Already in training that I knew, especially later on, when I had the experience. And the one thing that you still come across is that the people that give you the missions are people that have never gone or done that. And especially when you work in this type of system, where, really speaking, there are no manuals, as I say. Nobody knows from the past. They're only sort of a rough idea. It becomes sometimes very frustrated that they still put you on things that you know you won't. But the army, you know what they like. They won't take no for an answer. And they give you an order, and that's it. But I've had missions that already at training I said, well, we go to the system and do what we're supposed to do, but knowing that it would never be a success. So that's many of the missions. Actually, the really successful missions, you can count on your fingers. I mean, if I would consider 4 of my missions to be very successful, of about 11 missions I did. And of that 4, 2 extremely successful and 2 others average. So it's not a question of everything is marvelous. Most of the times you find you just can't do what they want. But an interesting thing is that in many cases you can pick up other things that they're not even thinking of that you can find out. For example, where they had internee camps. They never knew exactly where were all these internees, where were they interned, yeah, what situation. And in some cases, we were able to find that out. And we were all that, in that cases, also being able to find out the way they were treated and find out the best way to help them. And that was to smuggle food and medicine into those camps. But that came out purely through actually another failure of a mission that was able to pick that up and be able to bring that out. And then it depends very much on the bureaucracy you meet, if they're going to say, well, now I must help these people. get another mission going in that area, spend all the time on it, get food for them, get the medicine, and pursue this, or sometimes they can't be bothered. And they're still, although they know it, they say, well, they're too risky, or they find some reason, and you never hear more about it. So just because you got the information doesn't necessarily mean that in Melbourne they will react positively on it and do something about it.
You've been mentioning the observation missions and finding out what was going on. And what was the most important information you feel you gleaned from any one of those missions?
The most important, I think, was that I was definitely sure that if the Allies would go back there, that they would meet hostile situations. I think that was the biggest thing. Another thing was that where I operated, there were colonies of the Dutch, that they were hated, and that whatever happened, that they never will get back to the same situation as pre-war. Now again, that was not always interpreted in the right way in Melbourne and wasn't reacted upon in the same way. And to prove that was that I told them that. But nevertheless, in 1946, when the war was just over, the Dutch, completely disorganized because of the Netherlands being taken by the German, they were just back in power. They organized over 100,000 volunteer soldiers. They got 50 ships, their own ships, and hook and by crook, they got those troops to go to the Indonesian to get their power back. Well, it was a complete lost cause. That must have cost them millions and millions. In a time when they were, you know, down to nothing there. Food was short in the Netherlands and so, but they got these huge convoys going, embarrassing the Allies, because the Allies didn't want them back there. And they actually sent them back in other directions. When they got close to Indonesia, they said, you'll have to wait in Malaysia, and a lot of those troops are there waiting for these food shortages and everything. And over 100,000 troops, you know, and then after a year in 47, when they finally made it, realized that they weren't going to get back, they all had to go back again to the Netherlands. But that gives you an example how they just not always believed us or didn't want to know the facts of life. Mm. They still thought, of course, it meant tremendous things to England and Holland and the Netherlands. I mean, it was their bread basket. All the goodies came from those countries. So, you know, they weren't going to give up. And even if you brought in a report that suggested that they're not going to get back, it was treated with a little bit of hostility. They wouldn't say anything, but they weren't really happy with it. You could do much better by telling them the opposite, although it might not be true. That was very much so, and it wasn't until, I think, in the middle of the 50s that a new regime government came realizing that the game was over, that as far as their colonies was go, it's gone. Mm. And it was then a different situation.
You're mentioning, too, these missions that you were on as sort of spy mission. When did those missions become more an aggressive situation, where you were actually going in to change the situation, as it were?
That was when I was transferred from, I was then sort of Z Force, but transferred to another section of Z Force. Much later, after the war, I found out to a friend of mine in the SAS, commanding officer, told me, was called M16. And that was a very purely political type of people. They're working only for Australia and they wanted things done by hook or by crook. And then it got very nasty. If they found a person doing things against their policy, then they just knew one thing, eliminate. And the word eliminate was used quite a lot there. And that became a very, very nasty affair. They were a law by their own. And that was the worst when I got into that mission.
Well, and obviously you don't want to go too deeply into that information, but presumably there was a time when you were going to be given this transfer without your
choice. Don't know. You just say, from now on, you go report there and you see a colonel so-and-so, and he will direct you what you're going to do. They didn't say I was transferred or anything. It was just done, except that the mission changed. Instead of military missions, or that you could understand, it became political.